Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. While the impacts of a wet season in California are far-reaching, on the problematic end, it can be dangerous and destructive. But water is essential to supplying some 40 million Californians with everyday necessities, as well as bolstering the state's billion-dollar agricultural industry. But we're going to turn our attention to perhaps an easily overlooked benefit to a winter season that is rivaling decades past. The Yolo and Sutter bypasses were designed for flood control, diverting water, and in turn creating a floodplain. It's great for us humans, but it is a feast for wildlife. You may notice the coating of migratory birds that take a much-needed break on their annual journey known as the Pacific Flyway, but it's easy to miss what's underneath the water. Millions of juvenile salmon that are bulking up for a years-long journey to the Pacific Ocean and come back to the fresh water to spawn. This is something that Carson Jeffries knows very, very well. He's a fishery scientist at the UC Davis Center for Watershed Sciences and joins us with more. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So Carson, I've been told, I guess little bird told me, you are a fish whisperer.
Wow. Yeah.
Where did your passion begin?
I grew up in North Idaho fishing. And when I got to UC Davis as an undergrad, I realized that that's really what I wanted to do. And so I followed that path, and here I am 25 years later studying fish in California.
Yeah, what keeps you doing it? More than two decades later, researching fish.
It's just so interesting. I feel every time we go out, we learn something new, and I think the science that we're doing is relevant, and it's helping guide management in California.
Oh, yeah. So we're really focusing in on salmon for this conversation. What's so special about salmon in California?
Salmon in California are really interesting because we're at the southern end of their distribution. So we're at the very edge of where they live in the Pacific. And so because of that, we have very unique fish. We have four runs of Chinook salmon in California, which is different than anywhere else in their distribution in the Pacific. And so we have a very intimate kind of, I think, kind of cultural respect for them. And they've diversified throughout the state, but they're struggling.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that we're working on.
Yeah, and they've been struggling for years now. For those unfamiliar with the Yolo Bypass and the Sutter Bypass, what area are we talking about?
So the Yolo and Sutter Bypasses are both on the Sacramento River. So if you drive from Davis to Sacramento, you drive over the Yolo Bypass. And oftentimes, most of the year, it looks like agricultural fields. It's rice, it's wetlands. And then now you drive over it, and it looks like a big lake. And there's so much water that comes out of the Sacramento River, and that's really what saves Sacramento. The city of Sacramento wouldn't be here without the Yolo and Sutter bypasses that reroute the water around that river.
And how far up does the Sutter Bypass go?
The Sutter Bypass goes up to Colusa. So it's up at the Sutter Buttes, and it starts coming out of the Sacramento River around this town of Colusa. And then it bypasses all the way down and then comes back into the Sacramento River by where the Feather River comes in.
So we're talking about a pretty large area. Is the Yolo and the Sutter Bypass, is this unique to California, or are there other areas in the states that are similar?
It was kind of accidentally the pioneer of that, in that when originally the levee and flood control system in the Sacramento Valley was put up, it was just levees next to the river. And that was really designed on how the Mississippi was controlled. And it realized quickly that that wasn't going to work and we needed to do something else. Hmm. And so that's how we ended up with the Yolo and Sutter bypasses.
So where do the bypasses fit into salmon migratory paths?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So baby salmon are born higher up in the rivers and they take this path down the Sacramento River. It's like a freeway for them, and that they're going down that freeway, and then these bypasses and the other floodplains are like bed and breakfasts for them on that migration out. And it's a place where they can stop, they can get some food, they grow really fast, and they keep on going on their way out to the ocean.
So what is the big headline for this winter? How are salmon doing, juvenile salmon?
We are out looking in the rivers, and we're looking on the floodplains, and we're seeing nothing but big, fat salmon. These are the salmon that you really want to see, and that these are likely the salmon that we would have seen historically before we put levees on the river and kind of divorced the floodplain from the river.
Huh. Why do juvenile salmon do better and grow faster in a floodplain?
So when the water spreads out and goes out across this floodplain, it actually slows down. So if you drive over the Yolo Bypass, it's hard to see that the water is even moving.
Right.
But if you drive over the Sacramento River, it looks like a current that's going by. And what happens is that water slows down, it settles out, so the sediment in there settles out. You have lots of photosynthesis, they have lots of zooplankton and phytoplankton, and the fish just gorge on that food. There's about 100 times more food in the Yolo Bypass than there are. It's a little warmer. And then the fish grow about 8 times faster on the Yolo Bypass than they do in the river.
Wow, 8 times faster. So I imagine that bodes well when they head to the Pacific Ocean and then they got to come back.
Yeah, really. I mean, if they, this is packing their lunch for the big ocean, in that the larger they are when they enter the ocean, the higher the likelihood of them coming back as adults.
Hmm. Was all of this, I mean, obviously the bypasses were created for flood control, right? So humans did this, but this was this an unintended benefit to flood control?
Yeah, this is. I mean, we didn't plan this. This was solely done for our benefit for the cities of California and the Central Valley. And what we've seen is that these same working lands, there lots of them are agricultural lands, end up, because they're not in production in the wintertime, and that they end up being really beneficial for the salmon during that time. And it just, we let it happen. And, you know, it's still, it doesn't happen all the time. And we're trying to figure out how to make that happen more frequently and better than maybe, because it wasn't the original plan. Can we do better?
Hmm. Yeah, what are we learning from the Southern Yolo bypasses and basically this kind of symbiotic relationship with wildlife when during a really robust wet season to apply across the state?
So it's these systems, you know, because we, like you just said, they weren't planned for fish. And it's been this kind of cooperation between a bunch of different groups. We have Ducks Unlimited, we have California Trout, we have the California Rice Commission. And these are all groups that historically didn't work together because we didn't see how that overlap on the landscape worked. But it's really been this place where we realized that we can work together. And it we're working on prescribing how we can work with farmers and give them a prescription on how they could manage their lands better for salmon. Or working with the waterfowl communities to see how we can use those same habitats for waterfowl and for fish and farms and fish and make that all work together. Because when we spend all this time fighting, is nothing actually ends up happening. I think we've really taken some steps forward in the last decade in making a place where we can make it work better. And there are. We've working with the agencies. Yolo Bypass is, there's a current change in how water flows into the Yolo Bypass. And that's really being championed by the Department of Water Resources. And so we have this big group and coalition that's really going to make these things happen more frequently.
When talking about how, you know, the salmon, at least the juvenile salmon, are looking great, I mean, this comes at a time when there's near record low numbers of some salmon run, Chinook runs in California. I mean, even California Department of Fish and Wildlife, there is heavily restrictions or even a ban on commercial salmon fishing from Oregon down to the California-Mexico border due to these near record low numbers. That may be hard for people to understand. Like, we have record low numbers right now, but as it stands in our bypasses, we have really big, healthy juvenile salmon.
Yeah, and it's a disconnect with how salmon, because they do spend years out in the ocean, is that the fish that are being caught now were fish that left during the drought. And during the drought, we really don't have any access to floodplains. Migratory conditions are really low and warm and full of predators. And we see these, you know, these wet years are a real boost. And we've really been relying on our wet years that happen every 3 to 5 years to sustain our population. And by working with all these other groups, is we're working to try and make those wet years, or what happens during those wet years, happen even not in the floods, but just during the regular years and even during the low water years. Can we still get some of those processes where we see the fish can grow and sustain this, you know, a commercial and recreational fishery and water usage? These are all things that are really dependent upon having a healthy salmon population.
So the healthy salmon we're talking about today will return in a couple of years.
They return about 2 to 3 years on average.
So just like with California and climate and weather, there are these dramatic pendulum swings from 1 year to the next, or 1 year and a couple of years later. I mean, there's really this kind of climate whiplash that's impacting salmon. Can we strike a better balance to hopefully even it out?
I don't think we're ever going to even out climate whiplash. I think we are subject to it. And, you know, we have more control over the dry years. It's the wet years where we really don't have any control over. And I think setting ourselves up for having opportunities during those dry years and making sure that we have a safe flood control system that works during those wet years as well, because it's all of these parts. And we have to take advantage of both the dry years and the wet years and make sure it's going, because I think that's our future. And that's what the models seem to tell us.
And that makes your research so important. I mean, you were talking to me yesterday that you look at the lens of an eye of a fish to pretty much get a diet journal.
Yeah, it is really interesting. After the fish come back and they spawn and they die after they spawn, and we go out and collect their eyes, which I realize how weird that sounds. But they tell us a whole bunch about what that fish did during its life. And so we can get whether they used floodplains as juveniles or whether they were in the river or how they use these different habitats throughout their life. And that tells us a story about what they've done in the past and what habitats were important for them and how they ultimately bring us the fish that we either rely on in the ocean for the fishery or the ones that come back and spawn and create the next generation.
Given that California, and we've been learning about this week, yesterday we were talking about the Tulare Basin. I mean, California doesn't have a lot of native floodplains anymore due to water infrastructure and water needs across the state for Californians. But what I'm hearing from you is there's also a benefit to having floodplains to humans as well when it comes to, you know, the dangers that come from having too much water.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword by having lots of water in these wet years. As we're realizing now, we see flooding in the Tulare Basin. We've seen levee failures in various systems. And I think it really highlights this multiple benefit of having these large flood control structures that have an ecosystem benefit as well. Is that when levees fail and lands are flooded, there's a big cost to that. And you know, one of the best mitigations for that, particularly if what we see in an ever-changing climate with more extreme precipitation events, are having floodplains that really have the ability to reduce that flood risk, but then also have this added benefit of having ecosystem function. You know, we're seeing the curtailment of the salmon fishery is a curtailing almost a $1 billion industry. And that ends up being really big. Those aren't small numbers. And so when you add up the human cost of flooding of houses and agricultural land, as well as the loss of the environmental cost for either fisheries or native fish that are returning, it ends up being substantial.
Carson, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you.
When I drive over the Causeway or the Yolo Bypass, I'm going to look at it very differently from at least for this season, since there's a good amount of water. Carson Jeffries is a field and lab director at the UC Davis Center for Watershed Sciences. And that is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. If you want to join the conversation, email us at insight@capradio.org. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.